Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Associated Chinese Chamber of Commerce recently did a survey among their members, Chinese businesses, and found that their respondents preferred to hire men now, following a recent amendment to the Employment Act that increased maternity leave from 60 days to 98 days. Now, the question is, do policies like longer maternity leave make women less hireable? Joining me on the show now to discuss this further is Lee Min Hui. She's an analyst at the think tank ISIS Malaysia, where her research focuses on policies to mitigate gender equality, with a particular focus on childcare policies and equalizing outcome for women in the labor market. Min Hui, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. That survey that I cited in my intro that was released by the Associated Chamber of Chinese Chamber of Commerce, employers now preferring to hire men because of longer maternity leave. What did you make of it?
Thank you, Melissa, for the question. Firstly, I think we need to talk about the extension of the maternity leave from 68 to 90 days. This was a necessary move for Malaysia to meet international labor standards. In fact, while 90 days is the mandated period for maternity leave, the actual recommended period by the International Labor Organization is actually 126 days to allow adequate rest and recovery time for mothers. So the original 68-day allocation that we had prior to this was actually wholly insufficient for mothers. So what employers are engaging in right now, preferring to hire women, men over women, is a form of hiring discrimination over what are essentially universal labor rights for all women and minimum leave periods post-childbirth. Now, employers are doing this because of the costs attached to financing maternity leave. In many ways, I believe this was expected, albeit undesirable, an undesirable consequence of the extension of the paid maternity leave. This has been well documented in all kinds of research. It shows that employers concerned with their baselines will likely choose against hiring women. There are two ways that I think we can try to circumvent this, because I think we need to start looking at solutions. The first is implementing more sustainable models of financing, such as, for example, tripartite funding, where leaves are financed by contributions from employers, employees, and the government, so that not all of it is under the employer's remit. And secondly, we also need to start looking at our legislation. Now, the Employment Act 1955 was recently amended, but it did not include clauses on hiring discrimination, which is what is happening now. It only has clauses for when you're being discriminated while you are employed. So these are two key areas that we need to start looking in now that we have the data that employers are choosing to hire men over women.
Okay, I really like that you brought up the issue of the cost of financing maternity leave, because it seems from a lot of the respondents that that was their biggest concern, the bottom line for businesses, particularly small businesses. Now, I want to ask you, because Malaysia is made up predominantly of SMEs, of smaller businesses, is it feasible to have smaller companies adopt this 98-day maternity leave? I know you said it's in line with international practices, but the idea of sharing, a cost-sharing model, how feasible is that for Malaysia?
Right, so there are a couple of things that we need to think about here. And I do agree with your point, you know, how feasible is it for so many of Malaysia's SMEs to adopt something like this? Well, I think this all boils down to policy design. You know, looking at the amendments to the Employment Act, it was implemented early this year, and there has been little to no consultation in terms of what does it really take to implement something like this. It has been a top-down amendment in the legislation, but what Malaysia can do is to look at its SMEs and start providing incentives or subsidies. I'm not talking about the bigger companies, I'm talking about SMEs who will likely struggle with something like this. So I think there's space for Malaysia to come in, put in some subsidies that will help them implement this and put it in for only a certain period of time. Let's talk about 2 years, 2 to 3 years, before you then graduate companies out of the program. Because I think changes, big changes in policies like this, there will likely be some friction, especially when employers are adjusting to these new legislations. And we see that they're now too scared to hire women because they are afraid they're going to take maternity leave, they're going to need a lot of time off, they're afraid of the costs associated with that. So I think there really needs to be more government funding when it comes to this. We need to share that funding amongst employers, employees, and the government. So we're not talking about just employers only the ones doing it, because, you know, research shows that time and time again, this has actually backfired, especially for policies that, while, you know, the goal was for it to be gender equal and the goal was for it to help women, the undesirable consequences of it need to be mitigated, it needs to be accounted for, and that's why we need to look at funding and financing.
Can I ask you, how can policymakers proactively make sure that policies, gender-sensitive policies like longer maternity leave, they don't have the unintended consequences, the undesirable outcomes that you pointed to? I mean, can we prevent this from happening before it does happen?
That's a really good question. And I think it boils down to a strategy called gender mainstreaming. It's a policy that has been adopted across many countries. We see it a lot in European countries, but basically it's a framework of policymaking that recognizes the idea that men and women have different concerns and experiences. And we need to integrate that at every level of policymaking, from design to implementation to evaluation. With gender mainstreaming, we will be able to implement something that's more nuanced and understands that there really is no gender-neutral way, a gender-neutral way of implementing any kind of policy. There will be impacts for different parts of the community, and some of those impacts can be worse if, let's say, they are poorer or they have less access to social protection or job security, right? So when it comes to gender mainstreaming, I think Malaysia is no stranger to this. Actually, we have tried to put in some of these things. It's called the gender focal teams. These are focal teams that are supposed to run across every ministry, every agency. But I think the issue with that here is that we don't know what's necessarily going on with the GFTs. There has been no reporting of it so far. There is no overarching framework to show us what kind of views or biases are being factored into the policies. We don't know who's staffing these policies. What are their KPIs? How are they going to achieve them? So for Malaysia to adopt gender mainstreaming in an attempt to reduce these undesired consequences, it has to strengthen its gender mainstreaming approach. It has to start looking at monitoring and reporting on this progress. And at its very core, it also needs to adopt a national blueprint on gender mainstreaming and cascade it down to all levels.
All right. That one of the things that has come out following the survey results, the finding of the survey that shows perhaps some employers prefer hiring men over women because of longer maternity leave, has been a discussion about the motherhood penalty. And I was wondering whether you could touch on that, the consequences of what is referred to as the motherhood penalty on women's careers, beyond just the hiring process. So, you know, getting into the workforce is one thing, but what is the motherhood penalty, and can there be policy interventions put in place to address it?
Sure. So the first way the motherhood penalty impacts women's careers is its dampening effect on wages. In fact, studies show that unemployed mothers are the group that accounts for most of the gender pay gap. But the motherhood penalty also has more subtle consequences, like women being perceived for having lower competence and commitment, higher professional expectations that they are subjected to, they're passed over for promotions and opportunities, all of which affect their career progression. The result is that women either drop out of the labor force completely or they resort to temporary work. And when they start doing temporary work, they enjoy less job and income security alongside less access to social protection. And these factors were why they suffered disproportionately during the pandemic. So the motherhood penalty can also affect the job progression of women who don't even have children by virtue of them being perceived of having children in the future and maybe having to take time off for that. So the motherhood penalty exists whether women choose to have children or not, even though it was originally, the term was actually originally coined to compare the difference between mothers and non-mothers, right? So in terms of policies to sort of counter the effects of the motherhood penalty, the first thing that we also need to look at is pursuing more gender-sensitive action, and that includes putting in more mechanisms of accountability for employers, like what is happening right now. This looks like mandating reporting on the gender wage gap, on the numbers of women that companies are hiring, and at what levels, how many of them are in C-suite, how many of them are in administrative levels. You know, in the UK, gender wage gap reporting is mandatory for all companies that have over 250 employees. And this data is made publicly available and is a way of holding companies accountable. The government also...
Sorry, please continue. Yes, you said government.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I think that there's also more to do beyond that. The government needs to also incentivize return to work programs for mothers. This is based on the recognition that women's career progression is not usually linear, and that this period of childbirth can be crucial in determining whether they stay in the labor force or not. But when we're really talking about this, we also need to talk about how there needs to be an entire ecosystem of care policies that starts with shared parental leave, longer paternity leaves, recognizing the fact that fathers too have a very crucial role to play in the home, and that needs to be equal. And when it comes to shared parental leave, that there is an allocation for fathers, because what we see now is that mothers are the ones constantly taking sick leave to take care of their children, you know, and what happens when they really are sick? We also need something about childcare access. Should there be childcare centers at the workplace, or should there be assistance and subsidies for childcare so that they eventually don't find it difficult to be in the labor force in the long term? And finally, you know, on the Employment Act, I think there really needs to be some monitoring and evaluation on its impacts, on its grievances, undesirable consequences. We need to start looking at how these things have played out, and then we need to start making tweaks accordingly.
Very quickly, in a couple of minutes that we have left, all of the things that you said point to the fact that businesses need to change the way they've been operating, the change the status quo. How do we better educate employers about the benefits of having gender diversity in the workplace, and also the harms, the potential harms of discriminatory hiring?
Right. I think that's a great question. And I think the issue also lies in the fact that we are not necessarily articulating the business case for gender diversity in companies. Research has shown that gender diverse companies have better financial performance, they attract and retain talents more, they have better productivity, employee engagement and loyalty. So what the government needs to do is to take this research and put it into action. So that will look like incentivizing more gender diversity in companies. That will also look like increasing the cost of discrimination through fines. And it will also need to leverage on employee organizations and associations and business communities to really move the needle. At the end of the day, however, we need policies that have teeth. These things need to be mandated, or we will really never go anywhere, you know? So we need to start thinking more critically and more strongly about what these impacts are, the kind of change we want to see. And we need to set targets. We need to compel businesses to set targets, public targets. How many women do you want in your organization? How many leaders do you want? Set those targets publicly, create ambitious and specific action plans to get there. And the government can play a huge role in educating them and incentivizing them to do so.
Minhui, thank you so much for speaking with me. That was Lee Minhui from ISIS Malaysia. We're going to take a very quick break here and consider this. More on this topic in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the recent amendment to the Employment Act, which allows for longer maternity leave. Now, The question is, are policies like longer maternity leave making women less hireable? This according to a survey that was recently released by the Associated Chinese Chamber of Commerce, which showed that their respondents, Chinese businesses, are now preferring to hire men over women because of the longer paid maternity leave. Joining me on the show now is Abhinaya Mohan. She's the Advocacy Director at Women's Aid Organization. Abhi, thank you for joining me on the show today. What did you make of this the survey and this apparent backlash to longer maternity leave?
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Well, the survey actually, which showed the shift, 41% shift in hiring of men that followed the amendments, is actually quite disheartening, and it's a worrying trajectory for Malaysia as a whole. You know, it has really the opposite effect of what the maternity leave of 98 days intended to do, which was to improve gender equality laws in tandem with ILO standards, to improve investment towards bringing women into the workforce. And I think there are several things to consider here. The first is, it is important to acknowledge the burden of operational cost that is really placed on employers in adhering to the new amendments. Secondly, it is that the hiring of women and women's health, really, health and well-being is still not a priority consideration for us in the workforce. You know, there is no buy-in to invest into bringing women back or really creating space for women where they don't have to consider their health or employment opportunities. And to be clear, you know, this extended maternity leave is also an added economic sort of pressure for many small and medium enterprises, many of which are actually led by women themselves and are also largely women run. So you can imagine that it's exacerbated the biases and the disparity, and also really badly impacts the success of women-led, women-run enterprises.
Right. So WAO has long been advocating for longer paid maternity leave. So what are some of the feedback that you have heard from businesses? And has there been sufficient engagement with businesses to tell them about this new amendment to the Employment Act to help them adapt to it?
Yeah. So I think there are certain sectors that we're engaged with in the consideration of this law. And, you know, to make it clear, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we have 98 days of maternity leave, right? It's what we want. But there is an issue where I think businesses, firstly, you know, had always talked about the cost that could incur. And if you remember, Melissa, the amendments were meant to be implemented last year in September, and then it got delayed. And all of this was to actually allow time for these businesses to really get used to the idea of implementing this leave. But I think essentially there needs to be more awareness as to why it's important. You know, there should have been consideration for the backlash, because it has happened in other countries before, you know, where the government doesn't share the burden of cost, there is a very clear backlash. Because at the end of the day, you know, in a country such as Malaysia, where we are not yet gender equal, especially in the workforce, there is very little consideration for what the requirements are for women.
What do you think can be done then, Abhinaya, for employers to be encouraged to prioritize gender diversity in their hiring practices, even if it is in the face of policies that incentivize, you know, essentially hiring women, men over women, or disincentivizes hiring women?
Yeah, so I think there are a few things that can be done. I think the first thing we should look at is really the budget. So this year, you know, there are some allocations that have been provided for SMEs. I think it's close to 10 billion, and that can be channeled to businesses and employers, particularly small and micro enterprises, small, medium micro enterprises, at least for a few years, you know, for them to offset the cost of having Malaysian women, you know, so that they don't face the motherhood penalty. And there must also be some sort of support. So that I think what really needs to be done right now is to do a gender impact assessment, which essentially should have been done while the law was being amended or being drafted. But I think that's something that needs to be done now, and also to collect data and research on how many women, how many mothers are actually going to be affected by this, what other creative methods have been thought out. Yeah, so these are just some of the things that, at the top of my mind.
Yeah, you mentioned could be considered. Gender. Right, you mentioned gender impact assessment. So how does that work? I mean, I'm just wondering because we really do need some kind of practice to make sure that to measure the impact of gender sensitive policies, but also to ensure that gender sensitive policies are achieving their intended goal and not causing unintended harm.
Yeah. So essentially, I think what is needed is for, you know, when we look at the laws, we look at policies, we look at how every clause will affect women and girls, you know, and also men and boys, right? We have to really like take into consideration the everyday needs. So if we're talking about childcare, for example, you know, that's something we have to look at, how it affects single mothers. You know, we have to look at how these sort of employment clauses would affect, for example, pregnant women or women who want to start families, you know, younger women, because we currently don't have job seeker discrimination protection. And so while we have pregnancy discrimination, so when someone's in the job, you cannot discriminate. We do not have, you know, there's nothing to really stop employers from asking really invasive questions to women who, you know, about their family planning. And so all of these, you know, if we had just put a gender lens when we were looking at amendments or we were looking at policies, that could have been some sort of consideration. But of course, drafting laws, creating laws are not as easy and straightforward a process. I think what we need is really data. We need to actually carry out the research to understand how many people are impacted by this. And then we also need to do a lot of monitoring and evaluation. So, you know, I mentioned the budget just now, the 10 billion ringgit that goes to SMEs. It's not a drastically new allocation, right? But what happened to previous years, and where did that money go to? Who did it impact?
Right. You mentioned also a bit earlier, I think you used the term motherhood penalty, which has this news has actually spurred a conversation of women sharing their experiences about the motherhood penalty. What policies do you think policy interventions could be introduced to maybe address some of the underlying causes of the motherhood penalty?
Yeah. So the motherhood penalty is really a term that describes some of the challenges and barriers faced by women after having a child or having children. And it stems from sort of stereotypes or biases that, you know, we already ascribe to mothers or women in, actually typically women who carry the burden of care, right? So, you know, there sometimes is the idea where, okay, you know, moms, you'll have more issues with hiring or with their productivity because they may need to care for their child if their child falls sick. You know, they're the first person. And, you know, it affects the wages, it affects mothers' ability to get hired, and also promotions. So I think, you know, in terms of policy, and I think really looking into law reform, because a lot of it stems from really the attitudes that we have towards gender and towards gender equality and understanding the role of women in public and in the workforce and in society. Right. So I think what we really need is a gender equality act to supplement the existing clauses that we have under Article 8, which is meant in the federal constitution, which is meant to enshrine gender equality and non-discrimination. A Gender Equality Act will also provide protection for women who are in the private sector, who are in areas where the law does not cover. Currently, the law covers primarily the public sector. And, you know, this really builds a strong case for the Employment Act to then, in its next review, to include protection for job seekers, like I'd mentioned before. I think that's one area of of how we should tackle it, but you know, there are underlying sort of barriers that need to be addressed. For example, I think a primary thing would be childcare. You know, that's always the first kind of barrier to employment access for women. And I must say that in this budget, the government's allocation for childcare were quite holistic. There was focus on community centers, there was focus on re-registering of childcare centers. And then I also hope, you know, there will be training for these community childcare centers so that women and families, parents feel safe. Another consideration, Melissa, actually is, you know, what happens if we increase paternity leave or if we make parental leave sort of equal, right? I think that could be, yes, obviously a lot more discussion is needed, but that will then lead to this understanding where raising a family and raising a child is actually shared responsibility.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking with me. That was Abby Nayawan from Women's Aid Organization. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.